So our reading for this morning comes from Genesis 22, verses 1 through 18. It's kind of a famous story in the Bible. That's on page 31 in your pew Bible if you want to follow along. The Word of God reads, "Some time later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, 'Abraham, here I am,' he replied. Then God said, 'Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about.' Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out to the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, 'Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you.' Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, 'Father?' 'Yes, my son,' Abraham replied. 'The fire and the wood are here,' Isaac said, 'but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?' Abraham answered, 'God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son.' And the two of them went on together. When they had reached the place God told them about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar, on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, 'Abraham, Abraham.' 'Here I am,' he replied. 'Do not lay a hand on the boy,' he said. 'Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son.' Abraham looked up and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, 'The Lord will provide.' And to this day it is said, 'On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided.' The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, 'I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me.'" I gotta say, I love this passage from the Bible, but as I was preparing this, I was kind of saying, "Oh God, but this is so challenging. Why do you always give me like a challenging message to bring the congregation? Can't I preach about like puppy dogs or something sweet like that?" And I really felt this was a passage that God's been kind of haunting me with the last few weeks, and so I thought you would share my burden as well. You guys can be haunted by it as well. But do we have anybody in here who's a really good test taker? Like, you just love taking tests? Like, anybody? I definitely am. I was somebody that really enjoyed tests and stuff. I was homework not so much. Homework was not really my thing, but tests were awesome. Like, I just loved tests. I will say this though, there was one test in particular though that of all the tests that I took, I wasn't good at, and that was a vision test, right? I have pretty bad eyesight, so my kryptonite has been the vision test. Have you ever failed a vision test before? I'm talking about like really failed, like the vision test. I mean, where the letters start looking like objects. Like, the doctor will be like, "Can you read line 4? Sure. C-P-7? A cat with a lasso?" there were times where I really thought that the doctor was just starting to mess with me. Go ahead and read line 6. "You are D-U-M-B. Whoa, hold on here, Doc. Now, the reason that most people fail eye exams, unless you're one of those select few that have perfect vision, is that your vision isn't perfect. Yet, have you noticed that even if you don't have that perfect vision, from your perspective, you can absolutely be certain that an E is an F, or that an R looks like a D. You know, there's been so many times where I've been convinced that a T was a T, only to find out that it was really a P. I've actually gone up closer to the examination board just to confirm that the doctor wasn't fooling me, right? That's a weird thing to do, isn't it? I know that my vision isn't perfect, and I know that the eye doctor has all the correct answers, but nah, I think they can't be right, because I know what I saw. I know exactly what I saw. And so much of this passage reminds me of a vision test. You see, when it comes to faith and our relationship with God, none of us sees perfect 20/20 vision, right? We all have areas and times in our lives where we fail to see things from God's perspective. And so God, He helps us by training us to trust in His perspective on things. And look, it's not an easy process by any means. But if we learn to put our faith in God's leading and His perspective, we can actually experience blessings, not just for us, but for those around us. And so I actually wanted to go through this passage and just a few chunks at a time so that we could see all the references to sight or vision throughout this passage, because it's almost like a joke, right? And it's interesting because the translation that we read translates it, even some sections or some verses as the mountain that God told Abraham to go to. But in the Hebrew, it's all about sight. It's all about see. So I just want to highlight all the different sees that we'll see. And it's important to do this because, you know, one of the things that can help, that can keep us from seeing God's goodness or seeing His hand in our life is if we don't slow down and notice what He's doing. And so we can miss big blessings of God merely by not giving God time to show us what He's doing. And so we'll start with verse 2, and you can click to the next slide as we'll read this little section again. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain I will show you." All right, so here's God's setup, right? After waiting and struggling for so many years to have a child that would set in motion this promise that God had given to Abraham to bless the entire world, God was now seemingly putting that promise into jeopardy. Abraham was to sacrifice the thing that was most precious to him. You know, talk about a vision test. You know, put yourself in Abraham's shoes for a second. You might find yourself saying, whoa, wait a minute, God. Are you sure you're seeing this correctly? This is Isaac we're talking about. This is the one that you promised. So there's a few things that we should notice about this passage too, before maybe going any further. You know, first thing that I want you to notice is that phrase that will repeat at numerous times throughout. It's as if the writer doesn't want you to miss something. It's God referring to Isaac as your only son whom you love. Now, those of us that have like knowledge of the New Testament, you're gonna be like, woo, like that's sending off flags already for you, because it's like, oh my goodness, this is what they called Jesus so many times, right? God's only son. In fact, at His baptism, that's exactly what God says. This is my son, whom I love, right? And so it's ringing those bells for us. It's like, oh my goodness, this is like a little foreshadowing. It's a little foretaste. And we know that because we have this perspective. We've already seen the fulfillment of that. But you have to remember that Abraham, he didn't see that bigger picture yet. He doesn't have that eternal, timeless perspective of God. And neither do we. You know, he doesn't see what God's planning to do in the end. He just receives this unthinkable command from God to go to the region of Moriah. And he has to decide to trust God. Now, Moriah is also an interesting term, right? It's one that you shouldn't miss, because Moriah, when it's translated, it actually means the land of vision, or the land of we'll see. So God is sending Abraham to the land of we'll see, and not giving him like any sort of details, right? You know, think about it. It's like when kids are asking, like, well, what time are we at? We'll see. We'll see. Just trust me. Go along with it. And so God is sending Abraham to the land of, we'll see. Just hang in there. And it's, I'm sure, very frustrating to him. Right? He doesn't even give him a specific mountain. Abraham would have to wait and trust God to show him the exact information at the right time. So you can also be sure that there's going to be plenty of times where, you know, in your life where you're just going to have to kind of wait on God and not get the specifics. Oh, God, when am I going to be healed? When will I find that job? When will your promise come true? Silence. You know, I think maybe it's because we have the tendency to be backseat drivers, right? When God takes that detour, we're like, you know what? That's not the right way, God. You're not going the right way. What are you doing? No, you missed our turn. That was our turn back there. You know, not resting in the fact that God knows the way. You know, yet Abraham, he does a couple things that helps us to see that he wasn't just trusting in his own humanly perspective. He was trusting in God's divine sight to guide him, right? So let's look at the next few verses. You can go to the next slide because we'll see some of the steps that Abraham takes here. It says, early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servant, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you. Now, what I want you to notice here in these verses is Abraham's faith in action, right? I try to find, I figured fiat would be an easy way to remember that, like the car, the fiat. Because for Abraham, faith, it wasn't a private thing. And it wasn't a passive thing either, right? Real faith, it needs to be outward and it needs to be active. Just as that tiny car full of people, if that thing were to pass by you, you would notice. You'd be like, oh my goodness. You'd go home and tell, like, your family, I saw the craziest car today. It was, like, really tiny and there's, like, 10 people in it. It was amazing, right? That's sort of the idea there, right? Is that it needs to be faith needs to be demonstrated outwardly because it can actually influence and benefit those around us. You know, even a little bit of faith really stands out in today's world, right? Now notice all the ways that Abraham puts his faith into motion. In verse 3 it says, early the next morning, and all the morning people said amen, right? Early the next morning. He didn't wait. He didn't give excuses or try to write off God's command to oh, it must have been like a bad sandwich I ate before dinner, you know. He knew that God commanded him to do something, and so he set out to do it. Then he cut the wood himself, right? There's nothing about any servants being involved in that process. You know, it seems like such a small little step, but he was demonstrating his faith in God. You know, I think that's what real faith is. You know, sometimes we think of this story and we think of the really big moments, right? Where Abraham is standing above, Isaac, his hand drawn in the air, ready to strike. But I think that real faith, it's not just big acts. It's about 100 small acts of obedience. Maybe so small that only God notices. You know, maybe it's when you give the tithe that God put on your heart to tithe and nobody else knows about, right? Or when you're honest about something, even when it's to your, it would be to your advantage to be dishonest about it. Or maybe when you make a decision to walk in God's direction when almost the entire culture is walking in the opposite direction. You know, I was able to witness that just this weekend. There's a whole bunch of young people that went and walked in the pro-life march in Washington, D.C. You know, contrary to popular belief, faith is not something that should be private. And so when Abraham finally looked up and he saw, right, that's what it specifically says in verse 3 there, he goes on to do something really, really powerful in verse 5. He makes a faith statement, and he says it to the servants. He doesn't just kind of whisper it to himself. He says this, we will worship, and then we will come back to you. Man, what a declaration of trust in God, right? In a sense, it was praise because he didn't see how it was going to work out. He didn't see it, but he trusted that God would keep his promise. And he shared that hope boldly. You know, there's times where we need to be able to share, even though we don't see what God is doing, and it's so hard to trust, to just be able to be bold about it and be like, you know what? No, I have a great God. You know, maybe Abraham thought that God would resurrect Isaac because even death was nothing for God to overcome. You know, whatever the reason was, Abraham's statement, it showed that he was starting to see things from God's perspective. Which is a pretty powerful thing because just a few chapters back, you know, God was reminding Abraham, hey Abraham, I know that you and Sarah are really, really getting old, but I'm still going to bless her with a child and stuff. And Abraham actually tried to convince God by saying, hey, look, there's Ishmael. I already got a kid. Why don't you just do it through that? He's my firstborn through Hagar. Abraham even says to God, oh, that Ishmael would live before you, which is kind of another way of saying, God, why don't you see things my way? Why don't you bless me the way that I'm prescribing or at the time that's most convenient for me? Abraham was back then, he was failing to see the bigger picture. You know, God would eventually bless the entire world through Jesus, and that would come, Jesus would come through Isaac's line. Like Abraham, sometimes, you know, we can be really nearsighted when God doesn't answer the way that we like, or when he asks us to sacrifice something. Oh, we would just have that faith like Abraham, right? And trust that God knows best. And there's a reason that having this trust or this faith is so important. There's a reason that it needs to be something that others can see. You see, in this story, there was more than one person being tested here. You know, let's look at verses 6-8, if you can put it on the screen as well. And Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering, and he placed it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and wood are here, Isaac said. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Ooh, gosh. You can almost sense that tension right there, right? And here's how Abraham replies. Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. You know, it's interesting that even though most Bibles will give like a little headline leading into the story of Abraham's faith is tested, I'm struck by how Isaac's faith is also tested. Look, Isaac goes along on this journey too, right? He suffers all the doubts and unanswered questions that come along with it. Isaac is the one who carries the burden, right? He goes through the same grueling journey in the wilderness. He you know, goes over the same rocks and obstacles, and he's the one who's eventually tied up. And he's looking intently at his father, trusting that they'll make it through. And that he won't abandon him, trusting that he knows where they're headed. You can feel that tension when Isaac finally speaks up and asks the question. It's like he knows something's up, that something's not right in the world. And maybe he's starting to worry. So he asks the question because he can't see where all this is going. He can't make sense of his world. Now, our kids today, they are stressed. They are depressed, they're anxious like never before. I read a couple articles saying that, especially this Generation Z that's coming up, it's because they grew up during the stock market crash and you know, the housing market crash, and they saw the fear that it put in everyone around them, and that was instilled in them. These kids, they're still looking, they're looking at the faith or maybe the lack thereof of their parents, and to see if it's really worth staying on the path too. You see, Abraham's faith was being tested in this passage. It was being tested by God, yeah, but it was also being tested by Isaac. Now, parents, you're the biggest influence on your children's faith, and I actually want to kind of give you some ease in this too, because you're not alone in that. It does not all fall on you, right? It falls on us as a church family as well. That's why our faith needs to be something that's lived out for everyone. Because our kids, they're being bombarded left and right. And they're seeing the floodwaters rise. And they need a people, a village, a community that's going to say, we still have a good God. Let's wait and see what he does. Now, I will say though that parents, you know, God has this godly responsibility that he's placed on you. And I want to give you guys comfort too, that even the ones, because I know that we have a lot of you that, you know, have kids that have maybe wandered from the faith and whatever, you stay to the path. You stay to the path, because in an unexpected time, God is going to do an amazing thing. And I can't guarantee that your kids will come to have that same faith, but man, if you stay on that path, you give them a chance. You give them a chance to see how good our God is. So I want to encourage you, and I know that's a hard word, and it's harder for me too, as somebody that doesn't have kids, to say, well, parents, you gotta make sure you stay to the path, but I can boldly say that I know from my own life the countless times where, you know, where I saw my parents' faith, you know, and how, you know, even in the times where I was wandering away from God and I didn't want anything to do with them, just seeing my parents' example and their steadiness really was something that drew me back. But I want you to notice Abraham's response to this was so amazing. He says that God will provide. He doesn't say, look, I got this, Isaac. I will take care of this. He didn't try to solve all of Isaac's problems or say, here, let me carry that firewood for you. No. He invited Isaac to come and join him in experiencing that bold faith, that declares that, you know what, even though we don't have it all figured out, God will provide. You know, our children are watching. They're watching all of us, you know. And they're asking questions about life, and they're asking whether it's worth following Jesus. And our faith here, our lived out faith, which has been tested and is more precious than gold, that's something that we can pass on. You know, we shouldn't let Google or MTV or unbelievers set the example for our children or answer their questions about life. You know, if I can be honest, and I hope this isn't too harsh to say, but I've lived in Jersey long enough now to kind of see that for some of us, the measure of being a good person is how well we can provide for our children. You know, and that's well and good, but we're not going to need any of those things in heaven. You know, all that stuff is going to go away. You know, I can almost imagine it, you know, like, you know, we try so hard to make sure that our kids have a good home, but God has a mansion set aside for them in heaven, you know, or, make sure that they have a great education, but God's word is what's going to last for eternity. I'm not saying that these things are bad things, but it's all about priority, right? Because if we give them a faith in God, that's the thing that won't go away. So while verses 9 through 14, if we look at those, they show the full extent of Abraham's resolve, right? It also allows us to see God's heart fully. You see, God had asked Abraham to do the hardest thing a parent would ever have to do in sacrificing their only child. Gosh, think of that. What a difficult thing to do. You can imagine the hurt that must have been going through Abraham's heart as he raised that hand, as he raised that knife. And what possible lesson could there be to be learned through this? You know, this unthinkable request to sacrifice an only child is a demand that was made on God by humanity. We made that demand on God by our sinfulness. You know, and in that same region where Abraham would almost sacrifice Isaac, God actually went the whole way. He went the whole way in sacrificing his only son whom he loved. So that just as Isaac was spared, we might be also. That's the good God that we serve. He's worthy of our trust. And so this story ends with Abraham seeing God's provision. You can go to the next slide. Because it didn't happen maybe in the way that Abraham could have anticipated, but he ended up naming the place Jehovah Jireh, right? Which is basically the place where God provided, or the place where it was seen, where God saw to it, right? This place that was a place of wandering, or the place of, you'll see, when Abraham obeyed and just went without knowing that the end result, but just went, he was able to see God provide. And he was able to see it because he obeyed, right? You know, a life of faith is one that's full of unlocked miracles. And sometimes we miss out on seeing God's blessings because we're looking with our eyes, or we're searching out our own mountains. Maybe it's been a lack of obedience in small steps that's kept us from moving towards God's mountain. You know, or maybe it's fear that if you give this thing up that God's asking you to, then you'll lose everything. You know, maybe you can't believe in God because there's been so much turmoil in your life that how can you possibly see how God could bring anything good about from it? You know, wherever you might be, it's when we learn to put our faith in God and walk towards His mountain that we'll see His blessings. And I believe that the blessings that God wants to give are so big that those around you, they're going to get like that, you know, that concussion, that extra, you know, blessing that pours out. You know, like Abraham, our faith cannot be stationary and it cannot be passive. It takes courage and a lot of times an outward display of what we believe, even if we don't see it yet. And so we actually wanted to do something a little different, right, to wrap this up. And it's a little bold, right? Just like Abraham's steps were a little bold and he had to, you know, kind of do something physical. We wanted to just take a few moments to open up our altar area for anybody that would like to come and pray or have someone pray with you. And if I could have the people that are helping me to pray. Because here's the thing, you know, maybe you've had a really, really hard time believing in God or you're going through a trial right now and you want to trust God. Gosh, maybe you're waiting on a promise from God and you're starting to get really discouraged or you just want to be able to declare again, you know what? Yes, God will provide. I don't know how, but I know He will. You know, maybe you've been unable to let go of that thing that God's been asking you to let go because of some fear. And so I'm asking you to take a bold step. I'm going to ask you to come to the altar, to come to the mountain of God. You know, some of you may just want an opportunity to have somebody pray with you and just to remind you that you're not alone. You know, I ask you again, let's be bold. And as I think Barb's going to play a little bit quietly, as Barb plays, feel free to come forward and you can either pray with our gentlemen that are up here or at the altar. We'll just do that for a few moments and then I'll pray together. I don't want to rush anyone though, so feel free to stay as long as you want up there, but we will continue after that. So if you would come forward at this time. Let's respond one more time with the song "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus." It's number 349. I think we'll sing it through twice. Yeah, let's see how that goes. we can stand if we're able to. Now may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Be blessed this week. Amen.